Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this weekend edition, a look at a couple of headlines that are pretty interesting. Also preview some of the programming coming up this weekend here on KPCG. And look at what's going on at thetrumpet.com as well. All kinds of interesting things to look at. And also continuing to look at this, a really great reprint article at thetrumpet.com about the lawless state of America today. We'll finish that up as well. That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well, the new and updated trumpet.com. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to send an email, we have a little bit of room in the inbox. You can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Inboxes can fill up. It does happen. I'm Dwight Falk, by the way. Grant Turgeon here as well. That happens sometimes. You send an email, and then somebody sends you an email, and you don't respond because you never get it, and then they text you and say, can you delete some of your emails? Your box is full.
Or they get mad at you for not responding when you didn't even know you had it.
I didn't know I was getting any. Yeah, so that is the age we live in, the age where you text people to tell them their email is full, inbox is full. Yeah. This time of year in the autumn, if you're driving around town, probably almost wherever you live, especially in the United States, you're going to see some sort of a store or a coffee shop or something that says, we have pumpkin spice. That's really, really a big flavor. You like the pumpkin spice? You ever had it?
It's pretty good. I guess it's more of a seasonal thing, like you say. And I've tried it a couple times. It's not like I wait all year for it to come back, though.
Some people do. It's a big thing for some people. Little write-up here from Fortune magazine, which is kind of interesting. They say Starbucks' favorite pumpkin spice latte, introduced in 2003, has driven a $414 million a year market for the flavor, according to Nielsen 2017 estimates. And so that's a huge flavor now. And not only is it in lattes, but there's other companies as well that have jumped on the bandwagon, and they make pumpkin spice flavored things. And here are some of the companies that also now make pumpkin spice. This was surprising to me. Cheerios. You can get pumpkin spice Cheerios. Milano Cookies. Native Deodorant Company. You can get pumpkin spice deodorant.
Interesting.
I don't know that I want to smell like pumpkin, but I guess there's worse things you could smell like.
I guess it's sort of an inviting, pleasant smell, so maybe not what I'd want to smell like, but maybe it's not a horrible thing either.
I don't know. Pringles. That's weird. HIT supplements, whey protein, Oreos, Simply Beyond flavor spray, Jet puffed marshmallows. Don't even know what those are. M&M's, Republic of Tea, Breckenridge Brewery, and Clif Bars. All of those companies have a pumpkin spice flavor. And it's over a $400 million market now just for that.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible how popular something like that has gotten and how much money people spend on it, I guess. I guess that's more than a dollar per person for the entire country, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't buying it. So those who are buying it are definitely going all out.
Where do they keep it the rest of the year if you can only buy it at certain times? As if they run out, you know. Yeah. Oh, we just don't have any more. A couple of headlines to look at today that are pretty interesting. This one, maybe you've seen this. It hasn't been really a top story, but it's been in the news. This is from Baltimore. It says, another person attacked by a group of teens in Baltimore. It says, for the third time in just days, a group of teens strike yet again at the Inner Harbor area. This time, the particular girl was attacked. The mother says, the group of teens surrounded my daughter and her friends. My daughter was stomped, kicked, punched, thrown to the ground, beat with a baseball bat. So a horrible situation there. The victims are outraged that officers were nowhere to be found. Police have said the Inner Harbor is already flooded with cops on a daily basis, but they can't have officers on every corner. So that's how bad it is in some of those areas in Baltimore. You would literally need an officer on every corner to prevent gang attacks or, you know, what, I don't know if this is a specific gang or just a group of people, but in any event. And so the councilman, Eric Costello, said this is absolutely disgusted by this behavior, but he said this absolutely underscores the need for a larger police presence. And it's not just Inner Harbor, but neighborhoods throughout the entire city. The last thing we want is for someone to visit our city, have a bad experience, or even worse, get hurt, and then be scared to come back. Adding that the shortage of officers is in the city is real, he said, you heard the commissioner talk about how we're having a shortage of about 500 police officers from where we were 5 years ago. He says that number is real. So, you, of course, you remember what happened in Baltimore with all the protesting and the police, anti-police sentiment and everything. Now you come a few years down the road, and what do we have here? People getting attacked and then saying, hey, where are the police? And they're short 500 officers.
You can't have it both ways. Those protesters seem to want a much lighter police presence. The reality is that they need a lot more because you can't have women getting stomped on and kicked like that. I saw another video of some random man. He kicked a girl in the belly and then punched her unconscious. And she was on the ground, and all these other teens came around, were taking pictures of it, and then they just robbed her while she was unconscious on the ground. And it's one of those things where you just like almost jump out of your chair. You get so angry that people can respond that way, but that's why you need police. You have to have police nearby. I mean, I guess it's so bad in some places they have to be on every corner, but you know, that just shows you the reality of the situation. No matter how much protesting goes on, you have to have people out there who are looking out for others, because you have these types of acts that are just despicable.
Yeah, it kind of seems like a lot of them are sort of random. And that's really scary if you're a tourist or you live in the city. It's just a random attack. You look particularly vulnerable. And what could you do if it was a huge group of people? There's some really good write-ups at thetrumpet.com about Baltimore, what's happened there. This is an article from 22nd of May, What Has Happened to Baltimore? A couple of lines here. It says, 2 years ago, after the death of Freddie Gray, criminals were given space to destroy. Might have been, I'm not sure exactly when this article was, if it was this year or the year before. But anyway, a few years back, the Freddie Gray situation. It says, today, Baltimore is the homicide capital of America. Baltimore went up in flames a few years ago as fierce rioting and looting commenced after Freddie Gray was arrested and died in police custody. Before the facts of Gray's arrest or the cause of his death became known, protesters determined the verdict, guilty. Then Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, I think you remember her, told a press conference that she instructed police, quote, to do everything that they could to make sure that the protesters were able to exercise their right to free speech. She said, we also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well. And this writer from The Trumpet continues and says, and they did. Rioters in the city destroyed and damaged an estimated 285 businesses, $9 million in property. All six police officers involved were found not guilty, by the way. Three of them were acquitted by a black judge. Some of the officers themselves were black, yet the media emphasized the turmoil as a white against black issue. Since then, homicide rates have grown, and it appears that police are keeping their distance, giving criminals space to destroy human lives. The Bible prophesies that such moral breakdown will lead to our cities burning with fire, just like Baltimore. Until the root causes are addressed, which really gets back to family breakdown, until that's solved, the problems will only get worse, it says. That's from What Has Happened to Baltimore there at thetrumpet.com. And so we see in the headlines today that, in fact, it has gotten a lot worse. And, you know, it's three people, I guess, this week, but what's going to stop it from having those numbers increase?
Yeah, and like you say, the media did make this issue and many others where black police officers were involved into a race issue. They tried to pretend like, well, the police institution is a white racist institution. So even if the officers themselves are black, the actual act is racism whenever a black person is shot. I mean, that type of reasoning is just it's evil. I mean, you can't try to reconcile that type of thinking with reality. Even the video I saw the other day, that's called the knockout game, and that is, it was a group of black teens who were treating a white woman that way. But you don't hear it in the media whenever it's the other way around, whenever it's a minority attacking a white person, because it's not part of the media's agenda.
You're not going to hear, I would assume, say some of the nightly news talk shows do a special on, you know, Baltimore today, where is it after the Freddie Gray situation, and then go through some of what's happening, because it would totally shoot the narrative in the foot, as it were, and destroy it, because it's this false narrative that you know, the police are the problem or whatever. The real problem is family breakdown at the heart of it. But just on a more superficial level, if you get rid of that law enforcement and that rule of laws breaks down, that's the only thing. The police presence is the only thing that's keeping some cities from absolutely erupting, because they know there'd be punishment for it. If they knew there wasn't anybody around to stop them, or if they come in a big group to where they feel empowered, or play this knockout game or attack people, who's going to stop them? You're just not going to see it get stopped. And so, you know, for some of the city officials there in Baltimore to say, well, we hope people don't, you know, become afraid to come to our city, it might be a little late for that. Like, there's certain areas, well, in any city, but there's certain areas you would just absolutely avoid at all costs.
Yeah, and going back to that Freddie Gray situation, even there, the police did a good job of taking him into custody, because he had been selling drugs. He had about 30 crimes on his rap sheet, if I remember correctly. And even when the facts came out about that case, I believe he was refusing to be, you know, like tied down or like restrained in the back seat so that he wouldn't go flying all over it if they turned some corners pretty quickly. And I think he was even kind of suicidal in the back of the vehicle as well. But never mind that. We have to allow these people space to destroy things. That has to be one of the most incompetent statements ever made by a leader. That you are in charge of a city, yet you're going to allow your own city that you are in charge of to be destroyed, and millions of people who didn't do anything wrong to be affected adversely by these people who just want to destroy things.
Yeah, it's really frustrating looking at it from the outside. Imagine if you were one of the business owners there,
yeah,
and the city officials that you rely on for some sort of protection say, well, sorry, you happen to be in the destruction zone. You know, I'd be interested to find out what happened to those businesses. I would hope they got insurance or something to get them going again, but really bad situation there in Baltimore.
That's a good time to sue. We see a lot of frivolous lawsuits, but when your own city is purposely having the police officers stand down so that your business gets wiped out, what better time is there to sue than that?
That would be an interesting legal question. That's true. Here's a story that's kind of interesting, one other headline today. If you listen to the Trumpet Hour program from Wednesday, and you can find that at thetrumpet.com or kpcg.fm if you missed it live, they had a story in there about marijuana. Of course, that's really big news today. A lot of people feel like that should be legal. It is legal in some places, other places not. But here this write-up's from Philadelphia, from CBS. It says, natural hazard question mark, study says farming marijuana hurting environment. Researchers from Ithaca College say that the growing number of small pot farms being planted in remote forest areas are having a major impact on the local environment. The New York team points to forest fragmentation, soil erosion, and landslides as the main side effects of inserting pot farms into the forest. A marijuana landslide, yeah. The college has previously outlined how commercial marijuana farming was poisoning forest animals with pesticides and dewatering streams by improper irrigation in states like California. The report found that planting cannabis farms resulted in 1.5 times more forest loss and 2.5 times more fragmentation of the landscape and wildlife habitats than harvesting trees for timber did over the same amount of space. So there's a lot of debate about what it does to the human body, but there's some concern about what it even does to the land when it's being cultivated.
This must raise quite the conundrum for people on the left, because they tend to be hugely protective of the environment, yet at the same time, they allow any type of substance to be put into their bodies. So here's a situation where you have those two ideas in direct conflict with one another, and maybe that should make them rethink some of their viewpoints.
It would be interesting. I had that same thought because they're kind of lumped together usually, those two ways of thinking, or those two subjects. I know years ago they had a supplement, and I think they still use it, ginseng, which is pretty popular. And they happened to grow a lot in the area that I was at the time, that they turned old farm fields into ginseng fields. And, you know, they talked about the benefit of ginseng. I don't know that it has any benefit, but I do know from firsthand experience, because I worked on some of them, that they dumped a whole lot of pesticides on that stuff, and it did hurt the land, I think, in a lot of ways. And so it's always kind of funny when, you know, I would see, you know, this great herbal supplement, but they dumped all this poison on it to make it, you know, to kill the weeds and force the ground to produce it. So I was a little bit leery of those supplements, just knowing in the case of ginseng what poison got poured onto it to even make it happen in the first place.
Yeah, maybe they're more concerned about environmental issues as long as it's like a huge business or it's like a factory that is doing it, because those people also seem to be anti-capitalist, and they probably don't like people making a lot of money off of the environment. I would think that you'd make money harvesting ginseng or marijuana as well, but maybe they just can't quite reconcile all these different ideas under one umbrella, so they're trying to just make some exceptions.
Yeah, I don't think this college's report here will get a lot of traction. I don't think those people that are demanding marijuana are going to be too concerned about the forest animals. They should be, but I don't know that they will be.
So you have to have priorities. I mean, obviously the mind-altering substance is more important than the environment, than the poor animals out there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, what if, you know, even you look at this growing demand, I guess, that they're making for it. You know, what if they came back and said, well, as much as grows naturally, that's all we got, folks. You know, I see that they're not going to be able to do that, because they're going to have to force the land to produce some of these things, which, again, is a crop that isn't natural in a lot of locations. So they're going to start forcing the land for some of this potentially, and that can have a lot of negative impact as well on the land and on other things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I wonder what kind of people you hire to work on a marijuana farm. Like, are they good employees that show up on time, work hard?
Maybe they were good employees until they started working out there. This is like one of the most underratedly humorous stories we've had. Just thinking of all the implications of it. I mean, it just is, it's kind of just sad in a way, but just the fact that these people can't figure out what their priorities are, it's kind of funny.
Worlds are colliding in all these different social sort of causes that bump into each other sometimes. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story today is by Dennis Leap. They say they want a revolution. Think of that song from the 70s, talking about a revolution or whatever. I don't know anything about it other than that one line. It says, as America's millennial generation cries out for a revolution, let's learn a major lesson from the history of the French Revolution. And it's really, really good information in this article. But the reality is, as is pointed out in this article, and a lot of good details there, but revolutions don't end well, typically. They usually end in a lot of destruction. And you can look at some of the history here in this article.
Yeah, I haven't read the article yet, but Mr. Leap was telling me about it earlier this week, and it does seem like a really fascinating subject, especially with the French Revolution. From what I remember of it, they had long lines of people in prison waiting to be beheaded because they were captured, and the revolution didn't work out so well for them. That's probably not what a lot of millennials are thinking of when they decide that they want to overthrow the country that they're in. That maybe there are consequences like that. I don't think we behead people anymore, but still, there are some huge consequences. You could be put away in prison for a very long time for being treasonous or being a traitor.
And then just the mob riots. As is pointed out in this article, he quotes from a book that says, in France, what began as a movement filled with high ideals and hope witnessed the rise of a regime that brutally executed 17,000 citizens.
Yeah.
And that's what happens a lot of times. It happened in Russia, of course. You know, with the Red Rise, I guess they come into power and Lenin comes in with all these high ideals, and then they just murder a lot of people that don't agree with them, and that can happen. So it's interesting too. He notes in here, just for some perspective, the numbers of people in each generation. This is according to the Pew Research Center in 2016. The number of millennials ages 18 to 24 in this country has reached 75.4 million, surpassing the baby boomers. Generation X, which is ages 35 to 50, are expected to pass the boomers in population by 2028. The millennials are now the largest generation in America, and they have been stirred to action and to revolution. And, of course, they really took to Bernie Sanders. What did they say? Feel the burn? Was that the...
Yeah.
Typically, that's not a great thing, but...
No.
and then, of course, so just even, what was it, yesterday or the day before, there's these new revelations that have come out about how the DNC rigged everything for Hillary Clinton. There was some talk about that. I don't know if it's, you know, it's talk that's out there anyway. And there were a lot of people that really liked Bernie Sanders. But again, he was socialist. And then that's a dream, but it's one that often turns into a nightmare.
Yeah, and with these revolutions historically, those are often an excuse for a leader to take hundreds of times more power than they already have, especially if it's someone like Bernie Sanders in charge and he is fond of communist ideology. His heroes would be Stalin and Lenin and these leaders who kill millions of their own people. And so they're not thinking of the history behind this. And even if you just applied that to Mr. Trump being the leader now, you act like you're so terrified of him being authoritarian. Yeah, but if you start an actual revolution, couldn't he take a lot more power to himself to wipe you all out? So there, no one's thinking it through. No one's considering what the end result of a revolution could be, and just how communistic it all is. They don't know the background of that type of ideology and all the destruction that it has caused, because university professors purposely cover that up. They glorify the ideas and they gloss over the actual hard statistics that show how many people suffered underneath communism.
Yeah, revolution can be sort of a romanticized idea, but the reality of what it does to people's lives, I don't think people are really thinking about that, especially younger generation. We haven't seen anything like that in this country in many years, so people don't understand what it takes. Even we're going to talk a little later about John Adams, because he factors into this day in history. And he talked a little bit about, you know, hoping that the future generations would know how much it took to get the freedom that the United States had, because their generation had to live through it and struggle through it and do it. And, you know, generations come along later and don't appreciate it and think that it's just a given that you'll have your freedoms, and then want to turn it all on its head. But they don't understand how it could affect their own lives.
Yeah, exactly. I believe it was something like at least half of those who signed the Declaration of Independence were captured and killed by the British Empire. And if they weren't captured and killed, they were driven into exile in other European nations so that they couldn't be captured and killed. So that just shows you the high price of freedom. It's not just a matter of slave-owning white men beating other people to make them do all the work. There was a lot of sacrifice from everyone who was here to make this nation as great as it is. And even in the years following that, to undo a lot of wrongs like slavery. But the thing is, with our history courses now, it's the bad things are the only things that anyone focuses on, sadly.
Top story at thetrumpet.com. They Say They Want a Revolution by author Dennis Leap. Make sure you check that out this weekend. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. That's coming up. And a couple of topics today. One, talking a little bit about the U.S. debt. There's good economic news on some level in the country. Unemployment's down, jobs are up, so forth. But the thing people aren't really talking a lot about is the deficit. This is a little page here from Fortune magazine. It says, "Remember the deficit?" It says the federal debt for years, a boogeyman for business leaders and politicians alike, has lately felt curiously absent from the national conversation. But the country still owes plenty. The U.S. has the largest debt in the world and one of the largest as a share of GDP, or gross domestic product. That's likely to emerge as a key sticking point in the debate over President Trump's proposed tax plan, which is looking increasingly like a budget buster. Republicans' tax cut wish list exceeds $5 trillion, according to multiple estimates, and many experts doubt that the economy would get enough of a boost from the proposed cuts to make up the shortfall. So, the debt's a major issue. Some numbers here that are kind of interesting. total debt, the United States, number one in the world, $21 trillion. And that's not even really the total debt, but that's part of it. Japan is second with $9.9 trillion. The UK, $2 trillion. Italy, $1.9 trillion. France, $1.9 trillion. Germany, $1.8 trillion. And Canada, $1.3 trillion. That's the total government gross debt. Those are the top several nations. And then if you look at the debt as a share of GDP, which is an interesting number, Japan is worst with 239.2%. That's the debt compared to their GDP. Italy comes in second at 132.8%. United States third, 108.3%. Then France, Canada, United Kingdom, and Germany last with 64.7%. So you kind of have to look at it in relation to GDP because, you know, Japan is obviously a smaller economy, but they have a lot of debt. So it's you know, proportionally it's worse. But still, and I think that's the thing that maybe the U.S. people think if we're thinking, trying to be positive and say, well, we got this really big economy, though. Yeah, we do, but it's the debt is still 108.3% of GDP.
Yeah, and I think the reason that it hasn't been talked about as much is because there really doesn't seem to be a solution for it. So it's almost just a discouraging topic for anyone on either side to try to broach these days. What are you going to do about it? How is it going to change? The American people don't want any cutbacks of any kind on the welfare state, on entitlements. And so where else can you cut back except for maybe the military, education, more important things?
And I wonder if they could cut back without breaking the system. You know, it's a debt-based system. And even today, if you look at the headlines, there's a lot of headlines about the new Apple iPhone X or 10. And there are, people are excited about that. And I forget, that's a lot of money, but I can't remember how much it is. But people got to get the new phone, of course. And they're saying it's going to break their records and they're going to spend all this money in the holiday season and all these things. But it's all debt. It's mostly debt. And I don't know. What would it take for the U.S. to really make a dent into the debt? It would take generations of people sacrificing. And nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, isn't an average of like $800 of debt that people go into every Christmas season? It might be more than that. I know it's in the many hundreds. I'm sure of that. So that shows you it's not actual money going around that's building up the economy. It's just debt on top of debt. If you don't pay for it, the credit card company's paying for it. But at some point, they're going to get that money somehow. And all the debt's just being passed around like a plague.
They always have their commercials, you know, holiday commercials. And I'm always intrigued by the, and they do these every year. It's the commercials for a new automobile. I think Lexus has done it a few times. Lexus, nice car. Mm-hmm. And they show the commercial, you know, where they come out in the morning. They're all excited because somebody bought their, you know, spouse or their family member a Lexus. And I always think that's got to be a really niche market. I mean, how many people are going to go out and buy a brand new Lexus for somebody? I'm sure there are people out there, but I just wonder, well, they're spending all the money on the ad, like say during a football game. And you know, the majority of the people watching that football game are in no way capable, even if they want to go into a lot of debt, are probably not capable of doing that, like sort of as a whim, like, I'm going to get you a Lexus, you know. But still they run the ad, so I guess they must have enough people that come in.
Yeah, I'm sure that probably almost nobody just pays the $40,000 or whatever it is up front, $50,000 for a Lexus. But maybe on a whim, they might decide to get locked into a long-term car payment that makes you pay many thousands of dollars on interest on top of that. So that might be more of who they're trying to attract. It's sort of a deceptive way of marketing, like, oh yeah, it's Christmas season, of course you have a little bit of extra money to buy an entire Lexus at one time, but that's just not how it works.
It's very, very costly. The new Kia David program is coming up this weekend as well here on KPCG. It's on thetrumpet.com and you can see it on television. The title is Salvation is Education. What is salvation? Is it a spectacular moment or is it a lifelong process? What are the requirements for obtaining it? It's a really big question that people have. There are quite a few religious groups that do think it is a spectacular moment, that you sort of just have this magical time just out of the blue, and all of a sudden now you've become converted. Even historically, there's been debate among different people that were trying to be leaders of different groups, you know, who had the bigger moment. And of course, how can you prove it? You know, they would have debates over that. But is it that, or is it a lifelong education? That's the question. And it's a great question to look at and to answer. And you can find the answer there on the Key of David program.
Yeah, that's a powerful program. And he does sort of disprove the common conception that maybe you saw a white light, you're about to die and go into the next life, but then you were brought back somehow. And just a miraculous story that turned you from an atheist into a believer in God. You know, those types of stories that we always hear. But it's not about one event and then professing that you believe Christ. It's a lifelong effort. Like you said, it's about learning and it's about education. People probably wouldn't associate lifelong education with salvation, and that program just proves that actually is the truth.
Yeah, it's a really important program. It's always interesting when people have near-death experiences, for example, mm-hmm. and they say that they saw this bright light and everything. You ever been in an emergency room in a hospital?
Yeah.
What's directly above your head? It's a very bright light.
Yeah. That's true.
I don't know if that's the same what they're seeing, but I'm always like, well, yeah, but isn't there like a super bright light being pushed directly into your face?
Maybe that's what they're seeing when they're unconscious. That's a good. people might want to think about that.
I don't know. I just always thought that was sort of funny. Like, well, I was like, what else would you have seen? this huge bright light right in your face. This is an interesting event that happened on this day in history, 1796. John Adams was elected the second U.S. president. We have some good quotes from him in some of the literature we've been talking about, Character in Crisis, and then this reprint article about Lawless, Why America is Losing Its Rule of Law, and he had a lot to do with establishing America. So he was elected as the second U.S. president in 1796 on this day. The Massachusetts-born, Harvard-educated, Adams began his career as a lawyer. Of course, it's a Harvard's different. Law's a little bit different. It's all a bit different today. He was intelligent, patriotic, opinionated, and he could be blunt. Adams became a critic of Great Britain's authority in colonial America and viewed the British imposition of high taxes and tariffs as a tool of oppression. During the 1770s, he was a delegate to the Continental Congress. In the 1780s, Adams served as a diplomat in Europe and helped negotiate the Treaty of Paris in 1783, which officially ended the American Revolutionary War. From 1789 to 1797, Adams was America's first vice president. He then served a term as the nation's second president, and he was defeated for another term by Thomas Jefferson. If you're going to lose, Jefferson's not a bad guy to lose to. You can imagine that presidential campaign, John Adams versus Thomas Jefferson. Now, that's a debate worth listening to right there.
Yeah, and I think they had quite a rivalry, although it didn't turn into just personal attacks. It was just more about very, very slightly different views of the direction of the country. Now we have two parties that are pointing in the exact opposite directions, and God is nowhere to be found in any of the debates. They must have been talking about God constantly back then.
Yeah, and Adams and Jefferson, they went on after their political careers to write to each other quite a bit, and those are some very famous writings, and so they did respect each other. John Adams lived long enough to see his son, John Quincy Adams, become America's sixth president in 1824. By that point, the elder Adams and Jefferson were among the last living signers of the Declaration of Independence. On July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the Declaration, the 90-year-old Adams uttered his last words. As far as we know, Thomas Jefferson still survives, he said. He died later that day, and he did not know that earlier that morning Jefferson also had died.
No.
So they were quite connected there. Here are some famous quotes from John Adams. He said, "Facts are stubborn things, and whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passions, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence." You just take that one quote and then throw that out there into the sort of the political divisions and social changes we see today, and just say, go ahead and discuss this real quick.
People argue strongly against that quote, the idea of that quote, because they'll say, like, you've never been in my position. You don't know how I feel. And it's like, yeah, that's irrelevant, though. The facts don't bear out what you're saying. You have to base your emotion on the logic. You can't have emotion and then try to twist the facts into that.
Yeah, no one would doubt that, say, a person might have a very strong feeling about something, but that doesn't make it a fact. But we're in this age of magical interpretation of the will to where, well, if somebody believes it, it is so. You can pick a lot of subjects you could look at. The most obvious one probably would be the gender changing. Well, I don't want to be that. Well, but the fact's a stubborn thing, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we don't want to be. I mean, that doesn't change what we are. And you know, we always talk about in this society, like, never change. And yet that's the one area where we decide to change. Isn't that incredible? The one thing we can't change and shouldn't change is the one thing we're trying to change. We're not trying to change and improve our character, but our gender, yeah, let's go ahead and change that one.
Yeah, different times. Another great quote from John Adams here: our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And we talked about that earlier this week. And so we have a Constitution in this land for now, but are we a moral and religious people? I would say nay. Another quote, he says, I must study politics and war that my sons may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy. So they did a lot of sacrifice. He says, remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. And that's really, I mean, that's what you're seeing here and that we're seeing in the U.S. We do have threats from outside forces, but we're destroying ourselves first.
Yeah, and that quote right there is proof that it's not, this government structure was not just supposed to be an unlimited democracy where the popular vote wins, for example. It's not supposed to be a system of government that throws God out of the picture, because even though we have so much freedom and the government is less involved in our lives in this nation than anywhere else, if God's not involved, that's where things go badly off track. And that's why they constantly were stressing, yes, this might be the best system of man to put in place, but we're not in charge of it. God is ultimately in charge. Today, that's just not true.
Yeah, and that leads into this next quote he has. He had a very practical view of people, and it was biblically based. He said, there is danger from all men. The only maxim of a free government ought to be to trust no man living with power to endanger the public liberty. Because no matter who a person is, well, it gets back to like other famous sayings, right? Absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, people we're not good people in and of ourselves. The best intentions end badly a lot of times. And he understood that, and the founding fathers understood that. Where did they get that from? They got it from the Bible. You know, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it, right? They read that. They understood that. They believed it. And they tried to build a nation that took those things into consideration, knowing that, you know, no matter who people think is going to be the great leader of the people, there's danger in all men. And you can't put somebody in a position where they have so much power they can endanger everybody.
Yeah, and we have seen a shift in that way of thinking, especially in the last two winters of the presidency. President Barack Obama was considered the one man who would bring hope and change to the nation. People viewed him as the savior of the entire country. And the same thing could be said for the supporters of Mr. Trump, too. Now, with him, people love his blunt way of doing things. They love his personality, and they think that he alone can bring about positive change to America. We're clearly shifting in a big way to trusting in one human leader instead of trusting in God.
Yeah, there's great danger in that. This is a really funny quote that he has, and people would probably all agree with this today. He says, in my many years, I have come to a conclusion that one useless man is a shame, two is a law firm, and three or more is a Congress. This is John Adams, so I thought that one was kind of funny. He has a couple other good ones here. Well, he says, a constitution of government once changed from freedom can never be restored. Liberty once lost is lost forever. And then he also says, a government of laws and not of men. The rule of law. So that was John Adams. A government of laws, not of men. That's what they were looking for. And that ties into what we want to talk about for the rest of the show today, which is this great reprint article. We talked about some yesterday. We're going to finish it today. It's at thetrumpet.com, and the title is Lawless, Why America is Losing Its Rule of Law. And, of course, the founding fathers knew that if you don't have a rule of law, you have a rule of ultimately a dictator at some point. And, you know, we're not maybe exactly to that point yet, but we are we're walking the road towards that.
Exactly, and we are trusting too much in human beings. Laws never change unless human beings change them. Human beings can change overnight, and so if we are trusting humans, that just shows how much trouble we could be in. If someone has a change of heart and we were wholeheartedly behind them and supporting them, well, okay, now their ideas are different, and we're in a lot of trouble because we've given all this power to one person who has now changed his mind and turned against us. You can't rely on the human heart. You can't rely on human reasoning and human beings because we're fickle. We change so much. We're not reliable enough to put all of the trust of the entire nation in.
Yeah, there's sort of this idea out there, I guess, that we're in this postmodern age where we're just good people, you know. And that you can see those two different ways of thinking, where John Adams understood that there was danger from all men, including himself. But then today, there's a lot of people who think that man is inherently good. It does come back to a religious question, a moral question. Are people inherently good or inherently evil? And the founding fathers knew from experience, inherently evil. And you have to protect against that by having laws in place. But today the thinking is that, we just know better. We know better than other people know, and we can go ahead that way. And this reprint article on Lawless, Why America is Losing Its Rule of Law, says, today the Constitution is being used by the liberal culture to force their unlawful ideas on people. Now, I mean, I think everybody's probably in the mix on some of this as far as going against the Constitution, but if you want to look at the main push, it is from that liberal culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's where the biggest threat is coming from, because that side views any change as good change. They don't really think about why things have been the way they have for 6,000 years of human history. You know, they think they can fundamentally alter fundamental institutions, and that's just not a successful way to run a nation.
It says here that a Harvard law professor, and this is a different Harvard than what John Adams attended, same institution, but definitely different ways of doing things. It says a Harvard law professor is actually stating that the Constitution is not even law. That view comes from our most prestigious university. The very fact that he would even make that statement reveals extreme lawlessness. You know, I mean, if the Constitution isn't law, what is? What is the law we're looking at?
That's a baffling statement, and you could just pick apart a lot of these statements. I mean, he's supposedly one of the smartest people in the entire country today because he was educated at Harvard, and yet he doesn't think the Constitution is law. It's the preeminent law document ever outside of the Bible. So he's clearly just so detached from truth and reality, and he's so caught up in his own human reasoning. He's probably one of those people who thinks he's smarter than the founding fathers. He thinks he could have probably written a better document, and at the same time, he's also probably believing that human beings are good by nature. That's what you hear a lot from mainly the left. It's that human nature is good, that all people are good. Then how is it that we see so many horrific headlines today? At the same time, they attribute all of the world's problems to President Trump. So if humans are good, why are there villains? Why are there bad guys? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And we're trying to tear down law and trust in human beings when the evidence is everywhere that human beings make some pretty bad decisions.
Yeah, I never understand why, say, a law professor, or in the case of President Obama, which is he's mentioned here in just a minute, but he was a constitutional lawyer, apparently. I never understand why those people would attack the Constitution, because isn't that what they're basing their credibility on? Wouldn't that be like saying that you're a top-notch mechanic for the Model T Ford? Well, nobody drives it anymore, so you're not going to have a lot. What credibility would you have?
Right.
if you're an expert in something that you say is worthless, I don't understand what credibility you have there for your job or your profession. That always seems to be a bit of a it doesn't go together, those two ideas.
That's why I feel like their reason for getting into that field is probably pretty sinister. I mean, you know that you're taking away your own credibility, but if your entire purpose for getting into law is to undermine law, well, they're doing a good job of that, and maybe that is the whole reason they got into that subject.
Probably. They would probably say, well, I'm an expert in it, and I can see why it has problems.
I can see how to pick it apart.
Yeah. It says here, the majority of our leaders now agree with that Harvard Law professor. Former President Barack Obama, a graduate of Harvard Law School, has been at the forefront of this movement. In his book, The Audacity of Hope, President Obama argues that the Constitution, quote, is not a static but rather a living document. It must be read in the context of an ever-changing world. Or you could read it, my ever-changing opinion. As a senator, he characterized the Constitution as, quote, a charter of negative liberties, and called for the courts to break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted. And as Mr. Fleury points out here, the real issue here is lawlessness. And that's the real issue. And it's going to affect everybody's future. It's not just sort of an academic discussion, you know, to have at some university. If you start messing with the rule of law that underpins our society, you lose your society as well. And so probably most people don't take it quite as seriously as they should when you have comments like, you know, it's a charter of negative liberties, we need to break free from its constraints and all that. Those constraints were put in there on purpose to protect us from some of the leaders that have come through.
Yeah, I think maybe that's why he was so hostile to the Constitution and to the checks on power that have always been in place, because look how much power he seized for himself. Look at some of the crucial issues that he changed his mind on, where, for example, with homosexual unions, he used to think that marriage was between one man and one woman, and then he changed his mind on that. Well, I'd love to ask him the question, or anyone who believes that that's okay to change the definition, why now? Why would it change now? What's your reasoning for doing that? Is it just because so many people engage in the activity that we're just going to change the definition to make it okay? I don't see that type of reason being applied in other fields. Like, if we don't like the concept of gravity in science, we're gonna just pretend like it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's a very slippery slope when you start casting aside the law or just changing your mind on it, because as you pointed out, I mean, people are pretty fickle. They change their minds a lot, and often not for the good.
And who has the authority to change laws? I mean, we human beings act like we're in charge of this and we know what's right and wrong for ourselves. Well, we can't even figure out a person's gender anymore. We don't know what marriage is anymore. All these things are changing when they've been the same for 6,000 years. What's the reason for that?
Yeah, it's getting away from law, and of course, ultimately getting away from the Bible. This reprint article points out here from, again, it's Lawless. That's the title of it. And you can get it at thetrumpet.com. It talks about the source of lawlessness. And it says, even angelic empires fell because of lawlessness. It was Lucifer's problem. And it quotes Ezekiel 28:15, where it says, you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity, which is a just kind of a different term for lawlessness, was found in you. And, you know, he was perfect until he rejected God's law. Matter of fact, Rules for Radicals even salutes him, Lucifer, that is. In the beginning of their book, they're looking at that lawlessness and that rebellion, and they think it's great. And but this really shows you the source of the lawlessness that you'll see coming in all sorts of ways. You know, when you look at societal changes, attacking the Constitution, all these different things, where does it really come from? You do have to look at the actual source, which is Satan, the devil. That's not a popular thought. You wouldn't hear that anywhere, I don't think, outside of, say, The Trumpet or reprint articles like this because, well, because as it points out later, Satan is a god of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4. He doesn't want people talking about it, and so nobody talks about it.
And even sometimes when the source is in plain sight, like you say, the Rules for Radicals, that's a book that's the handbook for the radical left, and they're saluting Satan the devil in it. The source is right there. If people just would acknowledge that and wake up to what is going on, that's why we have, like, every couple of weeks a new cause, a new institution of society being torn down, and it's happening faster than ever. There's other reasons for that, too, why it is taking place now so rapidly like it never has before, and it all gets back to that one source.
Yep, and that's a message that, again, is unique, but it is very biblical, and you get it here from The Trumpet. It says, of course, the most lawless being in the universe is Satan the devil, and he is the god of this world, as mentioned. It says, what does that mean? It means that this evil spirit being has frightening power. Power we can hardly imagine. To say that he is the god of this world means that he rules. And even more, it means many of the people in this world worship him, but don't realize it. But that's the definition of deception. You don't know that you're deceived. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, you can see that. I mean, you'd have to look at a lot of the events that happen on this earth and say, people will often say, they'll see something and they'll say, well, where is God? Well, a really good question also is, well, where's Satan? He's right in the midst of it all and then inspiring a lot of it.
Yeah, and he's in charge. He's the god of the world, which people don't want to acknowledge. Even in traditional Christianity, there are so many people who believe God exists, and yet they don't believe Satan exists, despite God writing about that repeatedly in the Bible. It just shows you that sometimes we will do anything just to avoid thinking about the existence of evil, avoid acknowledging where the source is coming from. It's just, it's disturbing. It's hard to think that maybe there are millions of demons and they're confined to the earth and they're destroying everything in sight. Obviously, that's an unpleasant issue to talk about, and so people would rather ignore that.
Yeah, it says, notice this verse here talking about Satan being the god of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4. It says he deceives the whole world as well, then, if you look in Revelation. And it says that's talking about everybody. His deception affects this whole world's education, its religion, its politics, its science, everything. And that's, of course, what the Bible says. But another really interesting passage here, and you can think about this when you see riots and protests and all this revolution that's going on. Ephesians 2:2 calls Satan the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. And it says he is stirring up people's emotions, moods, and attitudes. When people get into a negative emotion, a bad attitude, or a wrong mood, he works on those people. Take a look at protests. Take a look at clashes between groups. You're going to be very hard-pressed to find a positive attitude in the bunch. I mean, that's why there can be no reconciliation between, you know, protesting factions. That's why the political leaders can't come together. I mean, look at the mood. Look at the attitude that's on display. Look at your headlines every day. It's exactly like this. It's negative emotion, bad attitude, wrong mood, and then, lo and behold, the prince of the power of the air works on that.
Yeah, and it is all emotion. There's no logic. There's no facts to it whatsoever. I've seen a lot of videos of these different protesting groups. They've probably multiplied hundreds of times since President Trump got elected. There's protests everywhere now because of that. But there'll be a reporter walking through these crowds. He'll be trying to ask just one of them to give an answer for why they are out there, why they have taken time out of their Sunday, their free day of the week, to go and yell and chant. And they can't even explain why they're there. They don't even understand why they're putting time and energy and effort into this protest movement. No one knows what the message is. No one knows what they're actually upset about. Any of them who actually do decide to answer, which actually is highly discouraged, the group leaders of these protests don't want anyone talking and exposing their ignorance. But whenever anyone does step out and answer a question, they show immediately how ill-informed they are. They don't know any of the actual news and what is happening. It's all emotion. There is no articulate thought. There is no legitimate grievance. It's just emotion.
Yeah. There's lots of, clips out there that you can see that happening. But it's definitely, when you see those crowds, it's definitely not a crowd to try to reason with or to talk to, because it's just, like you say, in most cases they know how to say whatever the main tagline is, you know, and usually it's pretty nasty. But but beyond that, no, in a lot of cases they're upset. They know they're upset, but I don't think they know exactly why. But again, it's because of all the lawlessness. That's really what makes people upset, but they want to push it on somebody else. This reprint article is really great. You need to get it at thetrumpet.com. Lawless, Why America is Losing Its Rule of Law. And ultimately, it does point back to the spirit realm and to Satan. And that's a really critical piece of information. And it says, if you're concerned about where the country is going and whether the nation can survive the next several years, read the booklet, America Under Attack, that expands even more on this reprint article. But it's a great reprint article to go through as well. Lawless, Why America is Losing Its Rule of Law. And when you begin to understand the where some of this all this negativity and all this destruction is coming from, and then you watch the news events unfold, it begins to make sense as to why things are going the way they are.
Yeah, and lies are a form of lawlessness as well, and we see lies just in abundance. The fracturing of the media into different groups that will appeal to whatever people believe. The media will tell you what you want to believe. There are different groups that will tell you whatever you want to believe. You never have to step out of your ideological bubble anymore. You never have to talk to people with different viewpoints from your own and then sift through all the information that's out there and look for the truth. So much of it is lies that most people just don't want to put in all the time that it takes to find the truth.
Yeah, it's hard to find these days, but you can get some great information there at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you check that out. Also, the Key of David program this weekend, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and the Trumpet Hour Week in Review coming your way. It's all the time we have for Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great weekend. Enjoy yourself, and we'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.